and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It is episode number 464. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today is Emily Soden.
Hello.
And Rick Cowley.
Hey.
He's back.
Woo. Who are you?
Yeah, it's been like 3 weeks or something in total, I think.
Something like that, yeah. I just kept taking days off and being sleepy, but now I'm here.
And so is Indy!
Yay!
Got the full house today. This is fantastic. Yeah, good. Good to have you back and a full house because Em and I, we were running out of things to say about you behind your back. There's only so much. We thought there would be an infinite wealth of terrible character flaws and, you know, facial things we could mention. But
we
ran out of steam after the first 3 hours and then we had nothing. All gone.
I am very disappointed in both of you.
That's all right. You can come on and give us inspiration for future disses.
Good idea.
So, we've got quite a busy show this week, so we'll jump straight into the roundup, which will include news about the launch date of Harry Potter's Wizards Unite. We've got Brawl Stars coming out of soft launch, which has been languishing in for over a year and going live. This is the Supercell game. We're going to talk about the Detective Pikachu trailer. Because we can't not really. And then we've got a whole bunch of new releases, including the likes of Bill and Ted's Wild Stallions, Black Paradox, Golf Peaks, and more. Plus that Pikachu game, I guess. We should talk about that, maybe. Like a new Pokemon game. People like that sort of thing. So we will. But first, the news. So, I've slightly soured on the whole Harry Potter on mobile thing following the launch of the last mobile game they released, which, as I recall, ended with my wizard being trapped in a whole bunch of strangling ivy spikes, and then the game saying, hey, do you want to free this person for a lot of money? Or, you know, leave them here to die. Which really kind of put me off the whole thing. However, Harry Potter's coming back to your mobiles, not at the end of this year, as previously promised, but in 2019, in the form of Wizards Unite, which was the other game that they revealed sometime early on this year. So while that first game that we played and has been out for a while now, I can't even remember the name of it. How terrible is that? Wizarding World? No.
Hogwarts Mystery. Wizarding World's the new one, isn't it? No, Wizarding
Unite.
World's the company who makes them now.
Yeah, it's all wizards and whatever.
Wizards!
Yeah, that previous one, which was much more of a kind of telltale-ish story-based game crossed with free-to-play elements. This is going to be an AR game. And judging by the little trailer teaser thing that was released, it is going to be the thing we thought it would be, which is you're going to be using your phone like a little wand and you're going to be seeing, I don't know, Dementors or something appearing in the real world and you're going to have to be like, Expelliarmus! And then the person on the tube next to you is going to be like, what are you doing? And you'll be like, shut up, I'm a wizard now, Harry. And then they'll push you off the tube. That's
okay.
A sad story.
That's oddly specific fantasy you have there of being shoved off the tube.
I'm just imagining what it might look like to normal people while they watch people playing AR games and waggling their bones around, pretending that they're wands like tiny children. But that's what's going to happen. The question is this going to be in any way popular? Because beyond Pokemon Go, have we really had a big AR hit at all?
Not really, but then Harry Potter is a world of its own. The fact that it's got movies, theme parks, you know, events. There would be a Harry Potter Day if our country allowed it.
There probably will be in future. You're right, that will happen. Because Pokemon Go was the big thing, and then it was based on Ingress. We've got Ingress Prime, which we talked about last week. That's happening in the world at the moment. We had that Ghostbusters AR game, which I think came and went with pretty much zero fanfare or interest from anyone. And then what else? I mean, like,
Jurassic Park one. Yeah.
Okay. Again, that's, I never played it, never heard of it again, so I'm guessing that didn't do big numbers. For me, the best AR game I've probably played ever is Euclidean Skies. Because it's a genuine, proper, actual game which benefits from having AR in it, which is fully 3D AR, which you wander around. Not like these games, where it's not really 3D, it's like a little 2D sprite that appears in, you know, floating in midair. That's what it really is. But I think you're right, you have that thing where it's the Harry Potter franchise, which is an unstoppable mega beast. If any game's going to break through again in the AR landscape, I suppose it's going to be this one. Does anyone want to play it?
No.
Wow. Okay, oh. Straight down the line there. What I know why you're keen, Em, is because it's got the words Harry and Potter in it.
Yeah, I'm so predictable.
But it's not winning you over, Rick, at all?
No, I don't know what it's going to be. Is it just going to be more Pokemon Go? Is it just going to be another location-based AR game that I don't care about? Probably. It's just, that whole genre is basically just one game constantly being ripped off, which is, you know, mobile games in general. But in this case, it just feels more egregious, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Pokemon just made sense. It was a thing, you know, in the world of Pokemon, you go out and you catch Pokemon. In this, it's like, oh, we'll just tack something on involving Harry Potter. There's things you have to do. Collect magic or something. It's just, yeah. I don't know.
From the recent trailer, it looks like they're adding more, like, story. I assume that means that when you walk around with your AR out, you're going to see patches of, like, magical breaks or creatures and stuff you're going to have to send back to the Wizarding World.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I would assume.
Well, that would make sense, yeah. I could be on board with that as a general sort of idea behind it, but I just don't know if I actually care about those kinds of games in general. I bounced out of Pokemon Go within a week.
Like, yeah. It's just not my thing at all. I'm excited about it in the same way I was excited about the RPG game, which I've also forgotten the name of. Hogwarts Mystery.
Yeah. We've said it several times and it's immediately fallen out of our heads again, because that's how inconsequential it was. It's probably doing really well and making a ton of money.
Oh, it makes so much money.
It makes a lot of money.
I need no idea. To add.
The reviews on Google Play are crazy.
Yeah.
But like, it's the same sort of thing as to why I was excited about playing that, because it's Harry Potter. I was curious. I wanted to see. So when this comes out, I'm curious. I want to see. But am I going to be walking around the block at all hours of the day sending Dementors back into the Wizarding World? No.
Okay.
I'm lazy.
We'll get a proper release date in the not too distant future, I imagine. But for the moment, those of you who had it penciled in for the end of this year, maybe just rub that bit of pencil out and stick a 9 where there was once an 8. Speaking of waiting for games for long periods of time, Brawl Stars, which was a game that was soft launched back in July last year, not this year's July, last year, by Supercell, is actually coming out in the West, globally in fact. But for the longest time, we've thought, A, that this game was going to be shelved. And then when we looked at the figures, specifically our PG Biz team went over and had a look at the kind of money it was making and where it was making money from its soft launch territories, that perhaps it was only going to be released in the East. Because when they looked at the analytics, I think like 47% of its like monthly revenue came solely from Hong Kong.
My God.
Because it was bringing in like 1.3 million sales for the month. And yeah, half of it was just coming from one region and nobody else really seemed to mind or care about it that much. So the thought was maybe like, hey, well, perhaps they just focus it exclusively on the East and then forget about the West. But no, apparently it is going to be released globally after all. It's interesting because, and by the way, if you've not played it, there is a video from last year, which I recorded about it, and we got loads of coverage. It's a top-down, I guess it's kind of a hero shooter, sort of, isn't it?
Yeah.
You control the entire thing with your one thumb and just wander around. It's a top-down single-stick shooter, if you like. But it's got a hero aspect. There's not loads and loads of people on the field at any one time. And it is obviously free-to-play. And it looked fine, but I played it right near the beginning of its launch, and I think a lot has changed since. The thing that makes it interesting is that it's Supercell. Supercell of Clash Royale, Clash of Clans, all the rest of it. And what they tend to do is only release a game when they know it's going to make $1 billion. And everything else just gets binned.
Yeah, it's a sign that they have a lot of confidence in it, even if we are kind of looking at it and going, eh, it could be all right.
Yeah.
Especially because they took so long to release it. They've clearly... Because, as you say, their whole idea is they come up with tons of ideas and they'll whittle them down to one, which might get soft launched if they think it's any good. And to get to soft launch phase is a big deal for any Supercell game. To stay in that way for like over 18 months is ridiculous. Just the very fact it's still alive is fascinating, because it means they must have some kind of idea of where this is going in the future and what they want to do with it. Because otherwise they just wouldn't release it. They just can it because they make $4 billion a year off Clash Royale and Clash of Clans alone. Like, they don't need this game.
That's not hyperbole either. They make $4 billion a year of that stuff. And like, to put it in context, these guys have been around forever, Supercell. They have four games out. They have Heyday, which is the thing that I think blew them up first. That was the one where they made that and it started making a ton of cash. Then they did Clash of Clans. Mm-hmm. I think that was the next one. Then you got Boom Beach. Remember Boom Beach?
No. I mean, really? I remember it, but it was fairly forgettable. It's just Clash of Clans again, isn't it?
It's just Clash of Clans again, but yeah. It's near the coast now. That's pretty much what it is. However, it's still sitting at number 44 in strategy, so I guess it still makes the big money. Nowhere near as much as Clash, but still. And then there was Clash Royale, and Clash Royale was obviously this incredible thing beyond even Clash of Clans, I suppose. So that's it. Four games that they've released in, I guess about 8 years? Maybe more? I mean, yeah. I don't know how old the original one is. They've been around for a while, and they have taken their sweet time, and they only release something when they know, right, this is going to make $1 billion. So, keep your eyes on Brawl Stars. It's going to be out next month on iOS and Android in December, and as you said, Rick, if they've released it, they have confidence in it. And if they've got confidence in it, they kind of know what they're talking about. This game could be the next big thing. Finally, for news, it's tangentially linked to mobile because we are going to be discussing the next Pokemon game. Specifically, Emily's reviewed it. She'll be talking about that next. But first, Detective Pikachu. The film that nobody, I think, realised they ever wanted. And now half the people have decided is the only reason to stay alive, while the other half of people are appalled at Pikachu having fur.
He looks creepy. Like, okay. I'm gonna lay my flag in the ground right here, right now. Pikachu looks creepy with that level of fur.
Let's get into this. So there is a 2-minute, 21-second trailer, and after people watched it, the line was firmly drawn down the middle between people going, actually, I had no interest in this film, and now this looks brilliant and I want it immediately, versus people who are going, what the hell have they done to my beloved Pokemon? So this is the live-action movie with the CGI Pokemon running around, where they're playing it dead straight. Pokemon are a real thing that exist in the real world, and there are Pokemon championships and all of that business like in the games. Only this time, Ryan Reynolds is voicing the detective version of Pikachu, who is understandable by, like, one kid. So he meets this one boy, and that boy can hear him talking with the voice of Ryan Reynolds. Everyone else just hears, Pika Pika, like in the games. That's the setup. Now, I'm quite into my films, and I was surprised that the film looks quite good. I mean that in terms of, like, the way it's shot and everything. The DP is good. Whoever's lit the film, very nice. Good work. And the CGI is quite strong and whatnot. Ryan Reynolds seems to be coming straight off the set of Deadpool with this one. You know what I mean? There's a bit at the end.
It's the exact same, like,
cadence and the bands.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And whatnot. There's a bit at the end where he's doing this interrogation, and I was talking to him before. It's clearly all been improvised. Like, they've just gone, right, here's the script. Now, let's do 10 alt takes where you just say stuff. And it does kind of work. It is weird seeing his voice coming out of that fluffy little face, but I don't know. I think it might work for me. I think it might make $1 billion like the Supercell stuff did.
The thing for me is because I'm a massive fan of the game, which came out earlier this year on 3DS, in like March. And in that, the voice is like a gruff detective New Yorker type thing.
Really? Is that why everyone was wanting Danny DeVito?
Yeah, exactly, because it's that kind of, like, gruff voice. And instead they've gone with Ryan Reynolds, probably because he was available and wanted to do a CGI movie and has a recognisable voice and selling potential. But I just don't think his voice really fits Detective Pikachu. I don't know. Because it's obviously not the same as the game. It is very, very, very different from the game from what I've seen of the trailer. In terms of the story's kind of similar, but the way everything's set up is much, much, much different. But the thing is, like, Detective Pikachu takes himself very seriously. The thing that's confused me about this, because they're clearly trying to make Detective Pikachu more lighthearted and friendly and more kid friendly, I suppose. Whereas Detective Pikachu in Detective Pikachu is actually playing it dead straight the whole way through.
I didn't know he had, like, a gruff voice. Isn't that just massively weird as well?
No, it's great, because it's like he's this coffee-addicted noir detective, but okay. It's a Pikachu in a hat. And it's just, it works so well for some reason.
Right.
But instead they've gone with Ryan Reynolds to make it, you know, Hollywood-friendly, I suppose. But on the flip side of that, the rest of the cast looks absolutely fantastic, and there's a lovely diversity to it as well. Like, you've got a main character is, what's his name? Justice Young? Justice Smith? Something like that?
I don't know him. Is he from something?
He's apparently was the star of The Get Up on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
But I think from what I've seen in the trailer, his performance looks really natural, which is amazing, given that you're on a CGI set and talking to nothing. Yeah. So he looks great. I can't remember who's in the lead female role, but I think she's great. Ken Watanabe is his name?
Yes, yeah. Ken Watanabe, that's right.
He's in it as well, for some reason.
Whenever a film has a tangential link to the East, they need Ken Watanabe to come in and be that link, because it's the same thing, like less so with Inception, but certainly with the Godzilla remake that they did, the Western one, they had to have Ken Watanabe come in and say, like, Godzilla
but
in
even,
the appropriate
even,
voice.
Like, that's a complete recast of the character in the game, because the character in the game is just this fat old white dude. So they've thought about how to make a diverse cast and also make a Pokemon movie, but Ryan Reynolds had to be there to sell it, which is kind of disappointing. But in general, I'm really excited for it. Although all the Pokemon are creepy as hell because they're too fluffy.
To offer the counterpoint to this, Em was delighted.
Yes, I was. I was so not down for it. Like, the very thought of a Detective Pikachu movie, I was like, oh my god, it's just going to be a Pikachu in a hat, because I hadn't played the game either. I was like, what is the appeal of it? You know, it's going to look so stupid. They're going to do it so wrong. I'm not going to see it. I'm not interested. You know, and, you know, video game movies in general aren't usually that good.
Yeah.
Despite the fact I still see all of them. And the second I saw this trailer and saw Ryan Reynolds' voice come out of that Pikachu, I went, uh-oh. Just in my heart, knowing that I'm going to go and see that on the first day it comes out in the cinema, and then probably again at some point a couple of weeks afterwards.
Oh, dear. Well, you raise a good point, which is that it is a video game movie, which had temporarily escaped my attention, and so it will be garbage. That's how that works. This... I will actually probably see this one, because it's just so weird. That's the thing that's sort of going for it more than anything else, is it's weird. Like, they're not doing a straight Pokemon movie, they're doing the Detective Pikachu thing, which itself is weird. But doing it live action with all the, you know, CGI things, and then turning it into a comedy, it's like, this is such a strange thing they've decided to do with it, that I'll probably have to see it out of weird fascination.
It's almost like they had sort of a core script, and then somebody went, but what about if it was Pokemon? Except that that's not what's happening, which is really interesting. Because it looks like it's all been slapped together, but this has been, Detective Pikachu has been in development. The game first came out in Japan in 2016, and took 2 years to come out over here and to finish as well, because they only released the first episode or something. They've clearly been developing it kind of along the film alongside the game and talking about the story and the cast and everything. It's really interesting that so much attention has gone into what is essentially a stupid, bizarre mashup of ideas that should not work, but is probably going to be brilliant.
A weird niche kids movie, which is using an offshoot of the popular franchise rather than the core franchise itself. Like, they haven't even done a straight... Like, I know that there are Pokemon movies around, most of them are anime. There's lots of Pokemon OVAs and, you know, tie-ons to the series. And there's probably a live-action one that was only released in the East and was directed by Takashi Miike. I expect. That's how that works. He does all of those. He did the Ace Attorney movie, for example, which I've seen some of, which is hilarious. But no, it's such a strange property. I think it might make all of the money, and it's coming out May 10th, 2019. So go and either recoil in horror at furry Pikachu, or look at his weirdo face. Oh, he's so cute, he's all fluffy. Ooh. Out and about this week, sticking with the Pokemon theme for a minute, Pokemon Let's Go! Pikachu or Eevee, has come out onto the Switch, and Emily, you did the review for it. So, I've not played it, I don't know a great deal about it. What's the elevator pitch for this one?
if you wanted to play Pokemon Yellow, but in 3D.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
That's basically it.
I played Pokemon Ruby, Sapphire? One of those. It was a gem. I played that one. Is this the free-to-play thing?
No, that's like, well, obviously Pokemon Go. It ties into it, but you don't have to have even touched the Pokemon Go games to kind of appreciate Pokemon Let's Go.
Okay, all right then. So it's a premium game then. Is it full price or is it one of those mid-tier ones?
Oh, it's full price, all right.
Okay, and how does it work? What's it like? Is it any good?
It is very good in the sense that you're playing a classic Pokemon game, sort of. The thing is, like, Dave Aubrey, our guide's writer, has played a ton of this as well.
Mm.
And he is the Pokemon aficionado. You know, he's played all of them, really good at it. I never got the chance to play them when I was younger.
Okay.
Like, I didn't get the games or anything, and I didn't have a console that could play them. So I missed out on it completely. So this was actually my first run with a Pokemon game that wasn't Pokemon Go.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not just pulling that yellow thing out of my ass. It does say it on the description.
Yes. No, it's fair enough.
And you don't go and get, like, it's not like in the anime where you pick the special ball, the only one that was left. Your Pikachu or Eevee just runs at you and is like, you, master, me, your Eevee or Pokemon, deal with it, bitch. Off we go.
Okay.
And it's like the sassiest little Pokemon you've ever seen in your life. And I got Eevee because she is the best, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And you just go off on a little journey. And from what I understand from other players, when they were initially complaining about the lack of wild encounters or something, you kind of just see them dotting about the map that you're running through. So they're like walking through the tall grass or in a cave and they just pop up and you just stumble upon them. And then it goes into battle mode, which is the same process as Pokemon Go.
That's the same process as the other ones. I mean, you could see them rustling around in the bushes, or at least you'd walk into long grass in the original games, and then you'd suddenly stumble across one.
Yeah, oh, but they're like everywhere.
Okay.
So it's not even a chance encounter, it's a, oh my god, I need to avoid these Pokemon because I've already got like 50
raptors. You can see like the 3D models of the Pokemon walking around in the grass this time, which is what the main sort of improvement is, because you can sort of go, oh, I don't want to fight that, I've got that. And you can avoid them or catch them if you want to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. And like as you go along, the fighting thing, I understand that when you used to fight in the old game, if it was a really strong Pokemon, you'd send your Pokemon up against it to weaken it, yeah?
Mm.
Whilst now it's all special balls, berries, etc. to like make them slightly easier to catch, and then pure persistence. Because the whole thing they drive into you is you need to have loads of Pokeballs on you.
And they're the things to throw to capture them in the end, but you need to batter the crap out of them first, then chuck a Pokeball at them.
No.
In the old games, you probably would have done that, but now you don't. You just keep on chucking the balls until they're like, okay.
Oh, okay.
There is a descending, like, if you've played Pokemon Go, there's a little ring that gets smaller, and then gets big and gets smaller again. The closer... Could you not? Sorry, she's licking her bum behind me.
That's low-key shade.
It's, but she just gets really noisy when she does it. Listeners, if you ever wondered what it's like owning a cat, it's mainly that.
Mm.
Throw your Pokeball and you get it in a smaller circle. It'll come up with a great or a nice or an excellent, and you're more likely to catch that Pokemon, say.
Okay.
And then that's it. It'll decide if it wants to be in, like it'll go green. If it's like, yeah, all right, I accept this fate. Or it'll pop back out and be like, ah, try again. And that's kind of it. As you go along, you battle gym leaders. You like they push a big quest thing. Be like, oh, you can take on quests, but it's not really a quest. Like, it's maybe one or two in each town, but not massive. The whole point is either you choose to fill up your Pokédex or to battle all of the gym leaders and the Elite Four. Or both. Mm-hmm. Depends on how much time you've got.
Okay.
Because I've played, you know, a good 10 plus hours of the game so far, and I'm still not even that far into it.
Okay.
Like, I haven't even encountered, like, I've only just got to the point where I can start encountering ghost Pokemon.
Rick, have you played a bit of this then as well?
I played it in preview a couple of months ago, so I've only had sort of a wander around one of the open areas. And I've just got it for some reason. It's just arrived in my postbox this morning. Hooray! Along with the cool controller. But yeah, from what I know of it and from what I've seen, it is basically a full Pokemon game. I think the main problem that everyone kind of had with it was that it looks stripped back and childish, and it's not a proper Pokemon, in air quotes. Mm-hmm. But in actual fact, it is. This is very much a full experience. It is a full price game. It is the full Pokemon thing. It's going to take you 60 hours to finish. It's not just a kid's game that's bouncing off the IP. It is a legitimate Pokemon game. It just happens to have the Pokemon Go catching stuff. It's still got Pokemon battles in there against other trainers. You still need to level up your Pokemon. And you still need to do all of that. They've just sort of tweaked some stuff to make it a little bit easier for kids to get into. I can't wait to sit down and actually properly play it as well. I haven't played a proper Pokemon game in years, but I pumped all of my childhood into Yellow. So to experience it again in 3D with Eevee this time, because that's the one they sent me, I'm very excited.
I think that looks to be the misunderstanding people have online, because it's getting, I think, bombed a little bit on Metacritic. The reviews are good. They're all around the upper 80s, mid 80s. But the user reviews are down in the 40s, because I think people have decided that it's, like you say, it's got something to do with Pokemon Go. It's a low-key, cheap spin-off thing for kids, and it's not that, by the sounds of it.
No. I mean, the thing is, even I, who, didn't ever play a Pokemon game, can understand this as a Pokemon game, because I did my research, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, when you play it, it doesn't feel cheap. It feels good. It's repetitive, but then the old games are repetitive.
They always are.
That's
why I bounce off them a little bit, because it is kind of a grindy
franchise. Yeah, it is complete, because you need to level up your Pokemon. That's the whole thing. You level up, battle harder trainers, rinse and repeat. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, it's a JRPG. I mean, that's what they do.
Yeah, pretty much. So. But I will say, can I just say that the local co-op is the best way of getting into the game I have ever seen on the Switch.
So is this local co-op as in two Switches or same Switch?
Same Switch. Like, because the thing is, you actually only play the game with one controller or your Pokeball.
Oh, okay.
Or unless you have it in handheld, you still only need one controller, but you're more, it's handheld, so you can't just take one off. So you only really have to play it with one, because you're only using the analog stick and the B and the A buttons.
Right.
And if you're kind of wandering around, or your mate comes in and is like, oh, can I play? You just have to pick up the other Joy-Con and make sure it's turned on, and then just shake it, and your other person falls out of the sky. And then if they're just like, oh no, I gotta go now, or I'm bored now, you just have to shake it and they just go away.
Like a Lego game, just pick up and play.
Yeah, but not even pressing a button or anything like that, you just shake it and then in they come. Like I've had to rearrange my grip settings before to try and get co-op play to work in certain Switch games.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Like, it has been maddening in some cases where they're just like, oh, local co-op. And it's like, but how do I get to it? But this is just so easy. Like, if your kid is having a problem, battling a trainer or something, you just pick up a controller and come on, son, let's go and show these guys what's what. And then you are. And then if your kid is like, oh, go away, dad, you're so embarrassing me in front of my virtual friends. Then you just shake the Joy-Con and then off you pop.
Drop in, drop out is one of the best things that I think was best used in the Traveller's Tales Lego games. Just that, pick it up, play, oh, I've got to go now, put it down, and you just carry on. And I'm always frustrated that more games don't do that. Oh, I went round to a friend's house a couple of weekends back, me and another friend, and we played Overcooked for the first time. I played it for the first time. So three-player couch co-op Overcooked. That was a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And we were lamenting the fact there weren't other great couch co-op games that supported three players available, because we sat down and we basically completed it in the space of an afternoon and a bit of the next day, and it was super fun.
There's Overcooked 2 now.
Yeah, I do know, and you can do the online mode. So yes, I am slightly tempted, but that was a great time, and I love stuff like that. So good to hear it's available here. Well, so let's go. Eevee and Pikachu are the ones that are available right now on the Switch. If you want to go and grab it, and you can read M's full review over on PG. Now, moving over to the mobile phones, let's talk about a quite mixed list of new releases. So, let's go positive first. Golf Peaks.
Hey!
It's a turn-based golf game, which makes sense, because golf is turn-based, isn't it, in real life? So, good. And it's a card game as well. It's a golf game where you're not using a slider or tapping at the right time to determine how hard or softly you hit the ball. It is determined by the number of cards that you are dealt at the beginning of each round, being of each course, if you like. And each of these cards have a different number of movements on it, different number of spaces the ball can travel, because this is an isometric grid-based game. And the idea is you choose a direction by kind of dragging the ball in whichever direction. But then whichever card you've got highlighted, so you've got a card which has three on it, that means your ball can travel three tiles in whichever direction you choose to move it. Once you take the shot, that card vanishes and you're left with the next card. So it kind of takes the form of a puzzler, because you're presented with a level, you're presented with a set number of cards, maybe only one or two at the very beginning and the simple courses. And what you have to work out is, which direction do I play and which card do I use first? So that becomes the strategy. You've got a set number of cards, play them in the right order and take each shot in the right direction to clear the various obstacles, which at the beginning is just a flat surface. Then you start getting inclined surfaces appear, which means that when you drag and hit the ball, if there is an incline, it will just roll down till it hits a flat surface. So you can maybe just use a one-tile shot to get it right to the bottom of a valley by just going boop and hitting it onto an incline, and then it just travels down, like with gravity. But then later on, you start getting more wrinkles, so you start hitting the sand, you get the bunkers, and those bunker tiles, when you hit them, they stop dead. And then if you try and play another straight shot card when you're sat on the bunker, it won't go anywhere, it'll just go doof and stop. So what you have to do is play a card that's got a chip shot on it. So that's indicated by a little upward arrow that goes over. And that means that he'll be chipping it up and the ball will leap from the ground, then fly through the air and then land however many tiles in whatever direction based on the number. And then you start getting quicksand appearing and other obstacles, and it gets more and more complicated. So this was our big indie pitch winner for... Can you remember which one it won?
It was Poznan. Because I was one of the judges, and I voted for it.
So you saw this one firsthand. You'd said it was good from what you played and voted on it, and you've been playing it yourself of your own accord, haven't you?
Yes, I did the review as well.
Oh, did you? Oh, wicked. What did you like about it?
So I think probably the cleverest thing it does is it gives you all the tools you need and only the tools you need. It doesn't try and trick you in any way. Like, the deck of cards you get, you will probably end up having to use all of the cards. You just have to find the right order and the direction to shoot the ball in. And I really like that, because there's no sort of sense that, oh, I could do better, I could do it in less turns, I could do it with more panache or anything like that. It's like, this: there is a set goal, there is a set way of getting there, and this is the tools, this is your means to do it with. And once you've figured that out, it's like, yes, awesome, next one. It's beautiful. It just, that way that it encourages you to experiment, but never tells you, oh, you've screwed it up big time, and you could have done better. There's no, like, star rating system or anything like that. It's just, once you finish it, well done. Now here's the next one. And I'm sure people will get frustrated with that because they want to sort of improve themselves, but for me, I like puzzles that when you're done, and there's nothing you could do to improve that. It's just, like, awesome. And you feel like a god, and then you're straight on to the next one.
Yeah, because some stuff is great to have open-ended solutions you can approach in every which way. I like immersive sims and stuff, where you have a billion different ways you can approach a problem. But it is also nice when someone's crafted a very specific puzzle, and it's up to you to figure out what that solution is. And there is one solution, and here are your interlocking parts, and you must arrange them correctly in the right order, and then you are a brain genius. Mm. And that's how that works. And that's what this game is. And it does it while still feeling quite chill, quite zen. There's no time limit on it. As you say, there's no star rating. You can undo any of your shots at any given moment, which might sound like, oh, that makes it really easy. No, it gets quite complicated later on. When you start pushing into, like, the end of World 3 and World 4, it's like, ooh, actually, these are quite a challenge. There's over 70 courses at the moment that are available. And I was firing through the first courses going like, oh, just 70? I'm going to bosh through this in, like, an hour. But then you hit, like, kind of the, you know, 20-something or 30th course, and you go, oh, no, this is going to take some smarts. But very nice, very clean, very simple, very elegant. Premium as well, so none of your free-to-play business here. £2.99, $2.99, I believe. And I would massively recommend it.
I gave it a 9 out of 10. I would also to mention, for people who are worried about difficulty, there are 9 courses that you have to complete before you finish a world, and then you're offered up an extra 3 courses based on that world's mechanics, which are much, much harder than the other courses in the world. But you don't need to complete them to continue. Again, it just rewards you and lets you move on as soon as you've done the requirements. And I think that's really cool as well. And the hard courses are just mind-bending, but really enjoyable and still still the same rules, but just harder. It's just such a good game.
it's genuinely really clever stuff. It was a delightful little thing. Because we've had lots of golf games. There are loads of golf games on iOS, and generally speaking, they are, you know, based around like pulling and dragging, a kind of slingshot mechanic like your Angry Birds, and getting the force right and stuff. And when I saw card game turn-based, I was like, oh no. And then started playing it, I was like, oh yes, this is the bomb. So do go and give it a look. Golf Peaks is the name of that one. Only on the App Store at the moment, not on Android, I'm afraid, but maybe in the future. On the other end of the decency spectrum, Bill and Ted's Wild Stallions came out, which is I guess it's a JRPG format, really. So it's a turn-based battler in which you take control of Bill and Ted, but only kind of by proxy, because really you create your own character. You can choose from a list of band members. And then you're fighting off mostly hordes of evil robots. So they're using the robots from Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, that setup where they're sort of transparent with the googly eyes and the visible teeth. And you have two cards for every attack option. So like when it comes to your turn, you can choose to do one of two attacks. You hit it, you do the attack. That usually means if you're a drummer, you hit the drum, or if you're a guitarist, it goes willy willy wee. And you just take it in turns, and it sucks. It's really bad. Like, it's so boring and slow, and the characters look ugly. And every time you do an attack with one of either Bill or Ted, it plays the same willy willy wee. Like, exactly the same. They don't mix up the notes or anything. It's just the same. And within 5 minutes of me playing it, I was already like furious at the game for playing all the sound cues too often and for everything taking way too long. And when my little drummer hits the drum, it just goes bit, bit, bit. I'm like, what's that? It does feel like it could be literally any game, but they have just put a Bill and Ted skin on it. And that game, with or without the Bill and Ted skin, is garbage. So I am not going to waste a great deal more time on it. It's free to play. You can get it now, but I really wouldn't bother. And I say this as someone who actually... I was around for the original Bill and Ted movies. Well, I was around for the second one, not the first one. And I like them. I've got a fondness for... Second one's really good, particularly. But this
second
is
Second one's
shameful.
Horrible. What are you talking about?
Second one's brilliant. This is better than the first one. You're a mental.
It's just disturbing and gross.
Exactly. What are you talking about?
I watched it as a kid, and like the hell scenes have permanently scarred my brain forever.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I'm convinced a lot of my love for horror comes from being able to enjoy the messed up programming that movie studios and TV studios did during the mid to late 80s. Early 90s for children. It was massively unsuitable for children. Because, you watch Labyrinth or The Dark Crystal or Bill and Ted's or whatever, and it's like, this is so weird and screwed up and kind of horrifying. And I'm like, yes, please, sir, may I have another? But don't waste your time with this. This is rubbish. So that's out at the moment. Oh, yeah, she likes it, see? She's all over it. Loves that Bill and Ted. Into the more zany humour. Picking things up a bit, Black Paradox is out on iOS. £3.99, $3.99. This is a side-scrolling shmup, very much leaning into the retro 80s aesthetic with all the pinks and the blues and the title screen that looks just like it. But it is classic side-scrolling gunishment. Lots and lots and lots of plasma and lasers everywhere, and you have to find the gap in the lasers and shoot the crap out of everything. You're basically in a DeLorean. That's your spaceship with the wings up. And you have to pick up power-ups as you fly through and destroy other ships, double-tapping on the screen when you hover over them to change weapons. You have two weapons at any one time. Once you've finished your levels, you can then go back and buy upgrades for the ship. There are only two slots available for those upgrades, so you have to choose which two you want to have at any given moment, and no more. And it's a roguelike. So when you do fight your way through and die, you go back to the beginning, you have to start all over again from the top. There are 7 bosses in total that you need to smash your way through. You keep the cash, but you lose pretty much everything else. So you really are starting from scratch every single time. It's quite good, is the thing. It's got the look, the 80s aesthetic and all that, and yes, of course, it looks a little bit like it's doing R-Type or Project X or any of those old game side-scrolling things. But it does it with a little bit of zazz. The little she loves it. Loves a bit of that paradox. You can do this move in the game where you summon a car once you've charged up enough, and it basically summons another vehicle, which is kind of like you're pulling in another version of your car from a different dimension. And the little interstitial sequences look a lot like the interstitial animation sequences from Flashback. Do you remember Flashback? From the Another World, guys?
Oh, vaguely. I remember the remake that everyone hated.
Yeah, the super, super tough single-screen side-scrolling... It's not side-scrolling, single-screen platforming games. Mm. They had these intro sequences that I, as a 7 or 8-year-old with my Amiga, worshipped and thought were amazing. These beautifully animated scenes that were clearly done by rotoscoping. And it's got a bit of that thrown in. So there is attention to detail here. It is doing that, you know, nostalgia 80s buck thing. But it's doing it quite well. Harry really liked it. I think he liked it slightly more than I did. I think it's good. But I wouldn't necessarily go mental over it. But you can watch a video review that should be up right now at £3.99 or $3.99, or read Harry's original review. Keeping things fairly decent for a moment, we mentioned Spitkiss during the last podcast, but I hadn't actually played it at that point. Harry reviewed it, said it was good. I have since done the video review and can confirm that it is in fact very good. This is the game which is kind of a cross between a platformer but with Angry Birds mechanics, where you are literally controlling a glob of spit which you ricochet by dragging back with the slingshot mechanic off of walls. So it will go and stick on a wall and then slide slowly down, and then you need to ping it off that wall and keep bouncing it off of available surfaces to get it to your partner at the other side of this single screen level. So you're basically gobbing into someone's mouth. That's the game. It's a bit weird, it's a bit left field, but very stylishly done and genuinely really good. I was very impressed by the use of it because it's much more like maze navigation puzzle stuff. But because when it hits a surface, your little blob does travel down, you are forced to react quite quickly in some cases to pick your next trajectory. You go off the wall quick and then jump over that bit. And then it starts throwing in lots of spikes and moving enemies that you have to avoid as well and all that business. Check out the video. It's a bit weird pitch, I know, but it genuinely is a properly good game. So Spitkiss is the name of that one. Rick, you had another Switch game.
Yes, I have been playing Trailblazers, which can probably be best described as Wipeout meets Splatoon.
Oh.
But that's a really generous comparison to what it actually ends up being.
Okay, unfortunately. I've not seen this. I'm looking now.
Yeah, so basically it's a racing game. You're in floaty anti-grav vehicles and you have to go around a circuit. But also you can drop paint on the floor of the road whenever you're going around, and if you drive onto, you've got like it's always teammates, so if you've got a teammate you can drive on the paint that they drop as well as your own paint, and you earn boost as you do it, which speeds you up, but only when you're driving on top of that.
Yeah, I see.
And there's also gates to drive through which will fire out some paint, and if you've got a full paint meter you can use it as an attack to fire forwards, which will give you a small boost, or it will cause an enemy to spin out. On paper that sounds like a really good idea. In practice, it ends up being so confusing and so many things happening at once, because there's never any sort of indication of what you're supposed to be doing to win. So there's a story mode, and the story is a bit meh. But like as you go through, you kind of have different objectives for each race, but one or two of them occasionally will be come first. Usually it'll be something like, oh, get 15 gates, also use one attack, also come at least third in a race. So it's like, you've got to kind of think of three or four different things at once whilst just trying to race. It never feels like you're doing anything to win. You will clear one objective and then you'll finish the race in whatever position. It's hard to tell what position you're in. And then you'll just sort of finish the race and it'll go, okay, next episode. It's like, well, I don't feel like I accomplished anything here. I feel like I just sort of drove and then something else happened and I went around in a circle for a bit. It's really disappointing in that regard. The controls also are horrendous.
I don't know. Have they gone tilt or is this just bad?
No, it's just bad. So you can only accelerate or brake. There's no drifting of any kind, which when you're in a sort of like super fast-paced game like this, you need a drift, or in Wipeout you have the air brakes and that kind of thing to help you turn around corners. Instead, the best way to turn around corners is basically just to hold the brake whilst you're accelerating. So you almost come to a complete stop, then point yourself in the right direction, then let go of the brake. So the pace of it is just really off. You gain boost really slowly and then lose it almost instantly if you stop driving on paint, which is really annoying. Mm-hmm. It's impossible to control your car while you're in boost because it's so fast. I really wanted to like it because I think it's got an amazing aesthetic.
I'm looking at the trailer now. This is a shame because it A, looks well Wipeout, obviously, yeah. but in a cel-shaded, cartoony kind of way. Yeah. And it does look nice.
It looks lovely. It's got a great soundtrack. Some of the characters are interesting in the story, and it's got like it tries to build up backstory and stuff. It doesn't really work in this setting, but it tries, and that's interesting. But it's just the shame that the actual game itself just threw too many ideas into the pot and couldn't stick to one, and it just feels like you're making progress, but you don't know why. And that's a really disheartening feeling, playing a game.
So that is all one word, Trailblazers, with a Z in it, and that is out for your Switch right now. But maybe, I guess, are you doing the review for this one?
Yeah, I'll do a review today, and it won't be too positive.
Blowing. Okay, fair enough. I think it's one of those mid-price games. It's designed for multiplayer as well. So £24, that's going to cost you if you fancy taking the plunge. But check back with Rick's review for the full score. Okay, I think that will do. Thank you all for listening, as always. Good to have you back again, Rick.
Pleasure to be back. I have missed chatting nonsense about games.
We'll come back and join us next week, along with Em, hopefully, and the rest of you who are listening. Always a pleasure. Go rate, review, like, subscribe, and we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
See ya.